Welcome to Rails with Jason. A couple notes before we get into this episode. I made a mistake in the beginning of this episode and I said, welcome to the Ruby Testing Podcast, but this is not the Ruby Testing Podcast. That's my other podcast. This is Rails with Jason. So when you get to that part, that's what happened there. The other thing I want to say is there's a Ruby conference coming up this August. The conference is called Southeast Ruby, and it happens in Nashville. I'm going to be at it. I'm actually going to be giving a workshop at that conference on the topic of Rails testing. So check that out. You can go to southeastruby.com to learn more. Now on to the episode. Welcome to the Ruby Testing Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Sweat, and I'm here today with my friend Prathamesh Sonpatki, who is director at Big Binary. Welcome, Prathamesh.
Hi, Jason. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, and thanks for coming on the show. Prathamesh, do you want to take a second and tell listeners about yourself?
Sure. Hi, everybody. My name is Prathamesh. I work for Big Binary. I'm a director there. I work mostly on Ruby, Rails, and React-related applications at Big Binary. Apart from that, I have also been contributing to open source a lot. I am on the Rails contributors list, and I'm also organizer of the RubyConf India, the annual RubyConf that we host in India. Interestingly, Jason was one of the speakers this year, so it's nice to meet Jason again after meeting him at the conference.
You almost said meeting you at the party. There was a party,
and we there were was at a party, the party yes. together.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that was pretty cool. And Mats was there. I got to meet Mats. I assume you got to meet Mats too.
Yep. Mats was there. Charles Netter was there. And a lot of other speakers as well. And this year we had the conference in Goa. And Goa is the party place. So it was a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's what I heard about Goa, that it's the party place. Any idea where you're going to have RubyConf India 2020?
Next year also, it will be probably in Goa. That's the initial plan, unless we get another proposal from some host city. But most probably, it will be in Goa again. Because okay. We do conference at one place twice. So initially, it was in Bangalore for 2 years. Then it was in Pune for 2 years. Then it was in Goa again for 2 years. And then in Kerala, Kochi. Then again, we went back to Bangalore. And then this year, we went to Goa again. So next year, most probably, it will be in Goa again. So you can come back again.
Nice. I would like that. My wife would like that. She didn't want to leave when we were in Goa. We were there for like almost 2 weeks or something like that. And at the end, she's like, hey, can we make this trip longer? I don't want to go home. Because this was... Nice. This was January, which you know, but listeners might not know. This was January, so we were headed back home to frigid Michigan, but it was super mm-hmm. nice in Goa. It was like 78 degrees every single day or something like that.
Yeah, weather is usually pretty good around that time. It gets into summer in starting from Feb, March. So right now it is very hot there, but November, December, January, that is the perfect season for Goa.
Yeah. So dear listener, if you like conferences, consider checking out RubyConf India. I had a good time. India's a fascinating, fun place. Go check it out. Okay. That's my pitch for RubyConf India. So Prathamesh, what you and I are going to talk about today is, Webpacker. Yep. So Webpacker is something I have zero experience with. So my first question about Webpacker is, what is Webpacker? And I guess I should preface that with saying that I'm not completely 100% ignorant. I've used Webpack a tiny, tiny bit. So I guess first, let's even go back further and start with that. What is Webpack?
So if you have used Rake in some of your projects, most of us have used Rake in our Ruby projects or in Rails apps. Webpack is similar to that, we can say. But it also does a lot of other things. So what Rake does is it manages the tasks, right? We can write a few tasks related to our application flow, and then Rake will run those tasks. So similar to that, Webpack can be used as a task runner to run specific tasks related to our JavaScript code. But apart from that, it is also a bundler. And bundler in the sense that not our bundler for managing the gems, but bundler for managing the code itself. So it can package our JavaScript code, it can package our CSS code, and it can deliver it for us in production. It can take care of minification, it can take care of a lot of other things which are related to managing and packing the JavaScript code. So it can perform as a task manager, it can perform as a module bundler, it can also perform as a loader to load specific JavaScript code in our application. It also has a lot of other tools related to developer productivity, like hot module replacement, which are very popular in JavaScript world because they make sure that you don't have to refresh the page when you make any change in the code. The change is reflected directly onto the browser. So it can perform all of these tasks. And in the Rails world, we had the asset pipeline for managing our JavaScript, CSS code, our images, fonts, and so on. But now this gem, Webpacker gem, is also present, which can take care of integrating with Webpack directly. Before the Webpacker gem, there was no default way of using Webpack along with the Rails applications.
Let me interrupt and ask you a question here.
Yeah.
What if somebody's listening and they're like, Webpack, I don't know, that sounds complicated. I've gotten by fine without it so far. Why should I use this thing?
Yeah, so why should you use Webpack or Webpacker with Rails application is because it allows you to hook into the whole JavaScript ecosystem without doing any kind of configuration. And that's the way in the Rails world, right? That convention over configuration. But because Webpack has a complicated configuration setup, what Rails has done is they have provided a gem, Webpacker, to hook into the Webpack ecosystem without doing anything.
Okay, so well, why I should use Webpacker instead of like bringing in Webpack into a Rails project by itself. But like, why even bother using Webpack at all? Why not just use regular JavaScript without Webpack?
Because Webpack provides you with a lot of tools that are very difficult to use with the plain vanilla asset pipeline. Also, what you can do is you can take advantage of all the NPM packages that are present in the JavaScript ecosystem, which is not very easy to use when you are using asset pipeline. Because then you have to make sure that there is a gem which follows the asset pipeline convention and it is present on Ruby gems so that you can include it in your asset pipeline. But here what happens is that you can just use the JavaScript code directly as if you're writing your front end directly in a JavaScript environment without worrying about how it will be served or how it will be integrated with other components in the JavaScript ecosystem.
Okay.
So that's the advantage of Webpack.
Mm-hmm. That seems pretty compelling because like on the Ruby side with Rails, we have bundler and we have a gem file for managing dependencies. And obviously we have a dependency management system because to do that stuff manually would just be untenable. But we don't have anything like that, or at least historically, we haven't had anything like that with JavaScript. And so you find yourself doing things like going to the jQuery website and downloading jQuery and just sticking that somewhere in app assets, JavaScripts. And that's fine when you're just using like two or three libraries. But when you're using like 10 or 20 or more JavaScript libraries, that becomes not a great way to do it, and to be able to take advantage of something like NPM would be a big win.
Also, sometimes the packages are not available as gems. So sometimes what you do is you include their CDN versions, or sometimes you include some libraries in vendor assets. So managing these kind of things becomes very difficult as the project size grows. Also, updating these things also becomes very difficult. After an year or two, you are not completely sure whether the library that you have in vendor assets, something.js, can be upgraded without breaking anything. Like, you have to have good test coverage or other stuff to make sure that everything is working properly. So management of such kind of assets can be really difficult, but that can become very easy if you switch to something like Webpack, because it allows you to manage as well as bundle the assets properly.
So what kind of frameworks do you guys use at BigBinary? Do you use React, Angular, or something else?
Yeah, we use mostly React. We haven't used Angular in a lot of new projects. Few of the old client projects that we have, they are still using Angular because the earlier versions of the code was written using Angular. But we mostly use Webpacker with React.
Okay. And do you structure, well, I don't know. I'll ask this question even though it might not make sense. Do you structure your applications as single page applications, or do you just like structure it so that React is just inside your Rails application? How do you do that part?
So we don't actually use it as a single page application. We use it alongside the Rails view. Most of the pages, what they do is they start with a layout, and in that layout, we insert a single React component to start with. And then that React component then loads other React components as needed, depending on the pages. And some of the pages are also plain Rails views where no React is used.
Okay.
It depends on the use case, but mostly we don't follow single page application structure anywhere.
And I know almost literally nothing at all about React. So what's an example of like a React component? Is there, I don't know, I guess I'll just ask that. What's an example of something you might use a React component for?
So let's say we have a page where let's take a simple example of blog, right? Because that's the simplest example that we have in the Rails world. Mm-hmm. So on a blog we have different articles, and on that article page we have first the header, the title of the article, then we have the content, then below that we have the comments, and what we can do is this whole page can be divided into separate React components. So let's say we have a header component, which will take care of rendering the header. And then we have the content component or the article component, which takes care of showing the article. This component can further be divided into separate paragraph components or some other small components, depending upon how we are structuring the article. And then you have the footer component or the comments component, where all the comments are entered. So in React, what we can do is our page can be divided into different smaller components. So so as you don't have any background of React, I will say that if you can compare it with the Rails partials, even though it is not same, but as you might have used Rails partials, consider one partial as a React component for that particular entity. So we use partials to render specific posts or specific comments. Similarly, we create a React component to render a specific comment or a specific entity. And then those React components are mixed with other React components to basically render everything on our page.
Okay. Getting a little bit like back on topic on the Webpacker topic, I'm curious about a couple things. So when I used to use Angular kind of a lot, first I was using Angular and Grunt, and then the internet decided Grunt wasn't cool anymore, and then the thing was Gulp, and so I'm like, okay, I guess I'll use Gulp. Use that for a while, and then the internet decided Gulp wasn't cool anymore, and Webpack was the thing. And right. Fortunately, it seems like Webpack kind of like stuck a little bit more than Grunt or Gulp, because it seems to have seems to have lasted longer. But I'm remembering, this is like years ago at this point, so these are vague memories, but I'm remembering like I would make a modification in one of my Angular JavaScript files. The saving of that file would trigger something to happen, whether it was Grunt or Gulp or Webpack. When I save that file, it would trigger like a recompilation of all my JavaScript and stuff like that. And then in my development environment, the page would automatically reload. Is there still that kind of stuff going on when you're using Webpacker with Rails?
Yes, there is. So in development mode, Webpacker uses dev server, Webpack dev server that comes with Webpack. And that has ability for the same feature that you mentioned, the hot module replacement feature. So basically what it does is whenever we update any code, behind the scenes, it will recompile everything and then it will just replace whatever has been changed into the memory so that our browser gets and the browser gets refreshed automatically and our change gets reflected. So this is present right now also, and we use it actually. I use it almost daily. Whenever I make any change to my JavaScript code or React code, it gets reflected into the browser immediately within a Rails app, which is running on Rails 5.2. But we are using Webpacker in that application.
And what is that feedback cycle like? Like when you save the file, how long is it before your changes actually show up in the browser?
It's almost instantaneous. I think it will depend on your bundle size. If you have a huge JavaScript code, it might be a bit slow. But in our case, it is instantaneous. I don't see any difference, because whenever we save the file, behind the scenes, Webpack will compile it, and then it will be available immediately.
Well, that's good to hear. I've worked on some projects where that feedback loop is not nearly so fast. It would take a long time to to compile. The other thing I'm curious about is deployment. So first of all, how do you deploy your Rails apps typically, or does it kind of depend on the scenario for that project?
Yes, so it depends on where the app is deployed as well. For example, so for some of the projects, we use Heroku, where you don't have to do anything for deployment. Heroku just takes care of that. But in other projects, we use different tools. We use Kubernetes. We use Capistrano in few projects. But the surprising thing is that switching to Webpacker doesn't change too many things in the deployment process, because we already have the task for assets pre-compilation, and that is present in most of the deployment steps. Like most of the ways the app gets deployed, the assets are already pre-compiled. And what Webpacker does is, Webpacker basically adds one more step to this process. So it adds Webpacker compile, and it adds this command to assets pre-compilation step. So along with your assets, your Webpacker assets are also compiled, and then they get deployed. Then they get deployed automatically along with your other code.
Okay.
So you don't have to actually do anything extra, because Webpacker, and that is the advantage of using gem. As you asked previously, why should one use the Webpacker gem and why not use the Webpack library directly in your application? This is one of the advantages, because the gem takes care of all of these things. It provides me the default configuration for development purpose. It provides me the default configuration for production purpose, so that I don't have to learn all the intricacies of Webpack. Because if you see Webpack configuration files, just understanding the options is very hard.
Okay.
Then it also takes care of these deployment-related things. It provides us with some rake tasks, which can be hooked into the deployment pipeline.
So let me see if I'm understanding this right. It kind of sounds like when you're deploying the compilation step, the asset compilation step, it's almost like from the perspective of like Heroku, for example, you'll deploy, and when it deploys, it'll precompile your assets for you. And Heroku doesn't necessarily know or care what's happening behind the scenes. Like the detail that it happens to be Webpack related stuff is kind of abstracted away from Heroku. All it needs to do is run the command, and then the things that need to happen just happen.
No, it needs one more thing as well, because Webpacker uses Yarn for managing the JavaScript packages. So it needs to have Yarn support as well. And it should have Node.js running. Only then it will be able to compile the libraries. Only then it will be able to compile our JavaScript code.
Your Heroku server needs to have Yarn capabilities?
Yes. Yep. Okay. It should have the Yarn package manager running, so that it will be able to install our packages. Because what happens is that, let's say you're using React with Webpacker. So Webpacker will create a package.json file in your Rails application, and it will list all the packages that are required for running React, all the NPM packages that are required for running the React application. So let's say you're using this React-based workflow, then your package.json contains React package, React DOM package, or any other NPM packages that you're using. And then those need to be installed and pre-compiled before your app gets deployed, right? So the server where you're doing this pre-compilation step, it should have access to Yarn so that it can download the packages and it can pre-compile the application code.
Okay, let me get one other thing straight. So there's more than one possible way to handle your assets when you're deploying. One way is like you can pre-compile your assets locally and commit that stuff to version control and then deploy all that. Another way is to not do that, and after you deploy, have some kind of hook where the server will pre-compile the assets.
Correct.
Which of those two ways do you usually do it?
We use the second way. We don't pre-compile the assets and check them in. We actually compile them in the deployment pipeline process. It gets pre-compiled before the actual deployment happens, because before the deployment switches or flips, you need to have the updated assets, right? So that's where the compilation step happens, and then migrations are run, and then the deployment is flipped.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I think the other way is not a very good way to do it. I have a rule that you don't commit artifacts to version control.
Correct.
Because those artifacts aren't your application, they're stuff your application produces.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, there's a point of confusion that I still had, but I don't even remember what it was at this point. But so you deploy your application, there's something on the server that precompiles your assets, and your server needs to have... Okay, here's the question that I was going to ask. What does it take to... It's been so long since I've even used Heroku. What does it take? So if you're deploying just like a regular Rails application to Heroku, it'll recognize the fact that you're using Rails and it'll just kind of be good to go. Oh yeah, there's these things, build packs. Yeah. It's coming back to me now. So it'll recognize that it's a Rails application and it'll have like the Ruby build pack or whatever. Do you just need to add like some kind of Yarn build pack or something like that? How does that work?
No. It will take care of it. It can detect the Rails version as well, I think. And I'm not sure how it exactly detects whether your app needs Yarn or not, or is Yarn present now on all the servers, independent of the Rails version. Because Yarn support was added from Rails 5.1 onwards. It was not present before that. And I'm not exactly sure how Heroku does it, or Yarn is present on all the instances. But you don't have to add anything, because when it is a Rails app, once that is detected, then the Ruby build pack is activated automatically. And then because the Ruby build pack is activated, it takes care of other stuff as such as asset precompilation. And in that way, you don't have to specify anything for Yarn. It just works.
Okay. That makes sense. My next question has to do with Rails versions. Is Webpacker part of Rails? I understand it's at least part of Rails in Rails 6. Is it part of Rails in Rails 5?
So it existed from Rails 5.1. But at that time, it was optional support. So when creating a new Rails app, you could do Rails new -- Webpack and start that application with Webpacker for managing the JavaScript code. But now what is happening is that Webpacker is becoming the default way of managing your JavaScript in Rails 6. Rails 6 is not released yet, but now asset pipeline is not the default way for managing the JavaScript. Webpacker is the default way. Asset pipeline is still used, but it is only used for managing your CSS, images, and other stuff, not JavaScript. For JavaScript, we are explicitly using Webpacker. And you don't have to include the gem yourself unless you are upgrading the app. But while creating a new Rails 6 app, Webpacker is the way for managing your JavaScript files.
Okay, so let's say I'm on Rails 5 and we listen to this podcast episode and I'm like, okay,
I want to try Webpacker.
Convinced me. I'm going to use Webpacker from now on. What do you need to do to kind of like convert your Rails 5 non-Webpacker application to something that uses Webpacker?
So one good thing is that even if you upgrade your Rails 5 application to Rails 6, Webpacker is not used because when you are upgrading the app, Webpacker is not included. And to start using Webpacker in that case is you have to include it in your gem file. You have to use gem Webpacker. And then after the bundle is done, you have to run the command for installing the Webpacker, Rails Webpacker install. And then it will create all the configuration files, and then it will start using Webpacker. But in that case, what is happening is that some of your JavaScript assets are present under app assets JavaScript, and then Webpacker will create a new folder, app JavaScript, where you can put rest of the assets, which can be managed by Webpacker. But then your app is split into two ways in which the JavaScript is managed. One is that your old code, whatever code you had before installing Webpacker, and then after installing Webpacker, you can add the new code under app JavaScript so that it gets managed via Webpacker.
Okay. I think that I just may check that out. If for no other reason than to see what that's like doing that. Because it doesn't sound like it's necessarily too hard to get that going and at least kick the tires on it. Doesn't sound like deployment is anything crazy or anything like that. Sounds pretty easy to try.
Yep. And what we did was when the Webpacker support was out, our app was already on Rails 5.1. And at that time, Webpacker was optional for Rails apps from Rails 5.1 onwards. So we integrated it. At that time, we had some code in the asset pipeline. And all the new code that we added under app JavaScript so that it can be used by Webpacker. And then slowly, we started removing the code, JavaScript code, from the asset pipeline as much as possible. Right now, we only have some of the libraries like ActiveAdmin, which are still not supporting Webpacker under asset pipeline. But all the rest of the code we have already moved to Webpacker. And managing that code has become very easy. So our asset pipeline only takes care of our CSS and images. But all the JavaScript code now is managed by Webpacker. And the application is still not on Rails 6. It is running on Rails 5.2.3.
So, Prathamesh, we're nearing the part of the episode where I ask you where listeners can learn more about you and stuff like that. First, I just want to ask you about Big Binary. I'm not sure if I'd heard of Big Binary before I went to RubyConf India, and then I saw a whole bunch of people wearing Big Binary shirts and stuff like that. And then after that, I've noticed, like on the Ruby subreddit, I've seen some Big Binary blog posts and stuff like that. So I'd probably come across you guys before, it just didn't like register for me quite yet. But can you tell listeners a little bit, like who is Big Binary, all that stuff?
Sure. So if you follow Ruby Inside or Ruby Flow or Ruby Weekly newsletter, You might have seen some of our blog posts related to Ruby 2.6 or Rails 6. So basically, we write blogs, but that's not the only thing that we do. We are a services company, and we work on Ruby on Rails applications, React applications, and also some of React native applications. Most of our team is remote. We are based in all parts of India. We have around 70 people who are working from different parts of India. We also have an office in Pune, from where around 10 to 12 people work, but rest of the team is fully remote, and remote is our lifestyle. We have been remote from the start, and we focus a lot on open source and sharing what we learn from open source with others. So that's why we write a lot of blogs, and you can find our blogs on blog.bigbinary.com. And we run series of blogs. So for Ruby 2.6 features, we were running Ruby 2.6 blog series, in which a lot of features that are coming up in Ruby 2.6 are discussed. Right now, we are also doing the blog series on Rails 6. As of now, there are around 10 to 12 articles which are published under this blog series. And there are so many other features in Rails 6. So I think by the end of this year, we'll have around 60 to 70 articles, depending on all the new features that are coming in Rails 6. And yeah, so that's about us.
Nice. And what about you? Where should listeners go to find you online? Do you want listeners to go find you online? Tell us
sure,
about that.
Sure, I will like that. So I am active on Twitter. My Twitter handle is, I will share that with you later. It's hard to spell.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, people can find me on Twitter. I am active there. Apart from that, they can also send me an email. I can share my email address as well. If they have any questions about Rails or anything else, I'm happy to discuss that.
Thanks, I appreciate that. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on the show and discussing Webpacker with us. I got a lot out of it. I think our listeners probably will too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.